CIN Files, the ultimate Bengals podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garafolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The big interview.
Let's talk Bengals, and to do it from CBS 7 in Dayton, we bring in Mike Hartsock. You find him on Twitter at mhartsock, W-H-I-O. Mike, let's start here. A little bit of a nail-biter in week one, but I guess that's what we love about the NFL is all the excitement. What's your big takeaway other than the W for the Bengals in the win over the Jets?
Oh, Nate, the big takeaway is the Bengals did what good teams do. They found a way to win when they didn't play all that well. You know, Andy Dalton gets sacked seven times, and they just didn't do a lot of things that they normally do well. They're still trying to get used to, you know, some new people in new positions. The offensive line is really a work in progress, and that's not a good thing when you've got the Steelers and the Broncos coming up the next 2 weeks.
Well, and when you talk about that with the offensive line, obviously when Dalton gets sacked seven times, you know you've got a problem. But when you look across that front line, that front five, as you said, you know, it's a work in progress. But do you feel like they're making progress, or did the game in week one kind of scare you?
No, it didn't scare me. They're making progress. They play the Jets front that really pinned their ears back and came at them. And they took some chances, and they all worked out for them for the most part. But fact of the matter is, Andy hit on three big passes, for about 150 yards there. That their secondary is a weak link that I don't think the Jets thought was going to be a weak link. You look at A.J. Green and what he did to Darrell Revis. Now, granted, Revis should have had some help on a couple of those passes, but fact of the matter is he caught 12 balls for 188 yards or something like that, and that's what A.J. Green is. That's the all-pro numbers he puts up.
When you look at the fact that this team was able to do it, obviously A.J. Green did what he did, but when you look across the other receiving options, when you don't have Eifert there and all the rest, were you a little bit worried going into that game, or did you believe in the receiving core that they had across the board?
They like what they've got. I like Tyler Boyd, the rookie out of Pittsburgh. I think he's gonna do really well for them. He's gonna hold things down at the tight end until Eifert can get back, whenever that may be. Maybe three more weeks or so, 2 or 3 weeks before Eifert gets back. He may be ready for the Broncos game, but I kind of doubt it. But they've got the options and they've got the guys. They're just not well known, but they've got the guys who will be able to step up and make plays. Now, it's going to be interesting to see what they do against the Steelers this week, because it's a completely different animal than what they faced the Jets.
When you talk about facing off with the Steelers, and I guess when I look at the matchup, one of the things that I'm looking for more of once we get into the remainder here of the season is maybe the balance in the running game, the concerns that may have existed based off of the game against the Jets, and the fact that, Jeremy Hill only gets 31 yards, Bernard only gets 25. Is that a concern for you?
I don't think it is. I think they had to go in a different direction yesterday, because of the way the game dictated. Jeremy's going to get his yards, and Gio's going to do what he does as well. Those guys, I've got no concern at running back. I think the concern for the Bengals offensively is what those guys catching the ball are going to do. I think the offensive line is going to be fine. I think they've got a couple of spots there that are a work in progress, but for the most part, they've got some veterans up there that are going to be able to take care of things, and they did in the second half. They played much, much better in the second half.
in the receiving core. We talk about Brandon LaFell coming in. You know, he was talked about during training camp and during the preseason as somebody that they were going to need. Obviously, you got to have a strong number two opposite A.J. Green. And they went out and brought him in on purpose to be that person, or to at least help along with Tyler Boyd that you brought up. What about LaFell's performance? 4 catches, 91 yards.
You know, Brandon played really well for a guy who didn't play much at all in the preseason. He had, he came in and got hurt pretty quickly. Just a little nagging injury that he didn't play a whole lot throughout the preseason. But I think everybody knew what Brandon LaFell was capable of doing. And I think we saw that yesterday. You know, I mean, you get 91 yards on 4 catches. That's productive.
Despite holding the Jets to just 22 points, were there any concerns on the defensive side for you? Did you see anything that kind of raised an eyebrow? As you just said, a couple of really good opponents coming up on the schedule.
I thought they played well in the secondary. You know, you look at what they didn't do up front. I mean, they didn't get as much pressure on Ryan Fitzpatrick as you know, you thought they would have. But that's what teams are going to do against the Bengals, because, you know, you've got Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins and Pecco up front. Those guys are going to get to you. So teams are going to throw quick against the Bengals, and the Jets were able to do that and hurt them early. But I think that once the Bengals made adjustments to that, you know, I mean, Fitzpatrick had some issues in the second half when he couldn't find the receivers that he was finding in the first half, and that was the plus to help him out.
Do you think, you know, a lot that's been talked about in the first 24 hours after this win over the Jets is the way that Andy Dalton and the Bengals offense weren't scared of Darrelle Revis. And you know, obviously there was a lot of success there. I think the stat I saw said that Dalton was 10 for 10 when going after Revis. Aside from the fact that Darrelle Revis is aging, obviously, and maybe isn't the same player that he was a handful of seasons ago, do you think that kind of reflects a mental attitude with Andy Dalton and this team, the idea that they're not scared of the corners and they're willing to go after somebody?
Yeah, Andy will go after anybody. That's the one thing about Andy Dalton. You know, I mean, you can say what you want about Andy Dalton not getting any playoff wins in his first 5 years, but he's gotten them to the playoffs. You know, I believe that Andy Dalton is one of the top five quarterbacks in this league. A lot of people are going to laugh at that and scoff at that, but Andy Dalton, week in and week out, the things that he can do, you know, to a defense – he's got this offense running exactly the way he wants them to run. And if he's going to find, you know, he'll be able to find weak links in anybody's secondary and pick it apart with the guys that he has.
Last one for you, as you get ready for the game against Pittsburgh on the road, obviously that's the upcoming game for week 2. You know, the Broncos are a home game, but let's start with the Steelers. You're talking about a divisional game. What's the one thing, Mike, that you didn't see, or maybe that you did see this past weekend, that you're going to be looking for in the game against the Steelers?
Well, pressure. You know, pressure on Ben. Ben can't sit back there and pick you apart, because Ben can do that better than Ryan Fitzpatrick can. You know, I mean, and this is an AFC North matchup. They know each other so well. They've got to make Ben Roethlisberger uncomfortable. He's not a guy that can move around back there in the pocket all that well. Anyway, you've got to make him uncomfortable. That's one thing that they have to do better this week than they did yesterday.
Excellent job. Appreciate the coverage from CBS 7 in Dayton. He's Mike Hartsock. Again, make sure you're following him on Twitter at mHartsock, WHIO, CBS 7 in Dayton. Mike, really appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us here on the podcast.
Nate, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Mike's finished. That means the coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, and as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device, or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. I mean, let's go back to Jeff's history. Yeah, when they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s. He didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had two losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem, because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, you know, maybe you can play that formula. Well, he was only 17 to 35, but he had two interceptions. If you're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula, you got to run the ball and can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners' defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know, because the Rams' offense was basically so inept. And so, yeah, we're going to have to see how it pans out. It's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks. Notwithstanding even the offensive side, obviously what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good. But we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they indeed go on the road? And it's a tall task, because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton, and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people, looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I've on record, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if they can stay healthy. And that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown. That offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. You know, yeah, Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams. Let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good, physical, you know, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, you know, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team. But they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense. But I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They too, okay? Now you got to follow up with it, because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good, and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show Game Day First for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man, we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. You know, for them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slot. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think it's going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years, because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for a rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did or 45 times like Dak Prescott. But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they looked like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas. Although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. So you had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division, but certainly that bodes well for Kansas City. If nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, Coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points and a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints, at home in that dome, you can check off pretty much the entire league. This guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it on two-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, a resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. And his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints defense continues. They're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know once again they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing talk about, you typically, particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a two-point play. Or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans, on the road, that late in the game against that crowd, and, oh, by the way, against the Hall of Famer like Drew Brees, I kind of like my odds with the two-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hands.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy. And you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home, so maybe the situation, you know, bared out for that one and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. You know, I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson, and everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person, so that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that and you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson, so how is that possible? Well, you saw on display. Now, that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. Maybe one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if this is going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could you know, have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's Overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false? The Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo.
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake here.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins, just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it. I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. There's going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday, even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD. Just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys, get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time, I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nate.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same-day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. It happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.